This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Kaslansky.
And we're your hosts for Art Moves. Today, we'll be talking to the executive director of New Yorkers for Culture and Arts, Lucy Sexton. Nice to see you, Lucy.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
I think that you're amazing. Your work is amazing. It's what New York City needs. So if you could, for our listeners, talk to us about the mission of New Yorkers for Culture and Arts.
Sure. Well, we are this coalition of 250 and growing member organizations across the five boroughs. And basically, my job, the job of New Yorkers for Culture and Arts, is to advocate with our city and state and federal government to increase support for arts and culture across every borough, across every neighborhood, and also to advocate for improved public policy, things that would make it more possible for cultural organizations in their communities to do their work.
Now, I'd like to just talk a little bit more about the advocacy space. How do you make yourself really visible? I think of the lobbying days that, say, the chambers might go to. Do you do that kind of work as well?
Yes, our own version of it. But, you know, part of it is just unpacking the sometimes opaque structure of our government, and particularly our local government. So I do a lot of work at the city council level. I testified today on a hearing on youth services for the city council, and I testified on behalf of cultural organizations that provide youth services, and make it clear to them what are the hurdles, what's going wrong, what is the great things that cultural organizations are providing, but also the problems of contracting with the city that entails. So that's an example of sort of getting into the advocacy space. And, you know, it also is something for me to facilitate meetings with elected officials. We just finished the New York State budget campaign, where we were talking to our assembly members and our state senators. And I was gathering cultural organizations from across the five boroughs to say, you know, can you have a meeting with, you know, Speaker Hasty of the New York Assembly? And we would meet with them on Zoom and talk about the continued need for relief, because COVID has impacted the arts and culture sector so deeply, and tell them a little bit about, you know, what's going on in our sector, how we operate, and, you know, really educating our electeds on the ways that culture operates, because sometimes that can be, their impressions of arts and culture can be very limited.
I want to get a sense, though, when you say cultural organization, could just get her to talk a little bit about what that includes. I'm assuming it's not just arts, it's performative arts. It's also, what else is in that mix?
Yeah, it's all the arts, right? Performing and visual and music and dance and theater and opera and all of the things that we would think of as arts. It's also cultural organizations. So whether that is the Caribbean Cultural Center, African Diaspora Institute in Upper Manhattan, or whether it's the Bronx Zoo or the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, these are spaces, you know, the Hall of Science Museum in Queens, spaces where people come together for community, for culture, for education, for art. So that's our definition of culture.
So in some ways, you're actually sort of imbuing them with a sense of community, because, you know, I have a lot of experience with museums going back decades, and they tend to think, especially in a challenging philanthropic environment, as competitors. But you're in some ways, you're saying that there's strength in numbers to a certain extent, yes?
This is the hopeful game changer of New Yorkers for Culture and Arts, and it's kind of why we were formed, because we can get into this scarcity mentality.
Absolutely.
Where
right.
We are competing with each other, and the big organizations are competing with the community-run organizations. And the fact of the matter is, which we have proved really over the last 4 years since I've been there and since the organization has existed, is that absolutely we are stronger when we come together. We are saying, yes, we are the Bronx Zoo, and we are Mocada, you know, Museum of Contemporary African Diaspora and Arts. We are, you know, Arts House Schools, which teaches dance class to kids in public housing in Coney Island. You know, so we are all of those organizations together. And as a unified voice, we speak much louder and give a much better picture of what arts and culture is to our elected officials. And as you say, better not to be competing and using the scarcity model, and better just to say, let's have a bigger pie here.
No, to say that, you know, the numbers are phenomenal because, you know, it's $110 billion is the cultural sector in New York City alone, like $140 billion in the state. The other thing that I recall a conversation I had with Ford Bell, who is the former executive director of American Alliance of Museums, going between events at the conference, and he told me that there's 850 million unique visits to cultural centers in the United States alone.
Yeah.
That's a lot more than...
The numbers are extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
And we do play a big role in New York City's economy.
Yeah, it's not self-evident, and it's not, you know, that's not out there enough to be able to say...
My question is has to do with advocacy.
Yeah.
Because in Brooklyn, what we hear, and I'm chair of the Brooklyn Arts Council, what we often hear from artists is they feel there's no voice, they feel they have no representation, and I'm talking about the individual artist as well. They have no representation, there's no one speaking for them. So though New Yorkers for Arts and Culture speaks for organizations, do you have a voice for the artists, those cultural workers, the art workers, the cultural workers they're called, as well as individual artists? How does that play out?
Absolutely great question. And it has been, so the first couple of years when it was just me working part-time, I really stuck to organizational advocacy. But in the past 2 years, we really have expanded to include individual artists and culture workers, et cetera, because that is our mission. It should serve the whole sector. And arts and culture doesn't exist if we don't have artists, if we don't have culture workers, if we don't have people doing the work on the ground and actually making things. So we have expanded, and actually the New Yorkers for Culture and Arts has a call, and everyone's welcome to come to it on Thursday, every Thursday afternoon. But that is for individual artists and culture workers. It's for small organizations. It's for large institutions. So we really try and get everybody into the same room. And we have an individual artist advocacy residency program where we are supporting individual artists who are doing their own advocacy work in, whether it's in disability arts or in LGBTQ arts and storytelling and advocacy. So those are some things that New York's Culture and Arts has done. But you'll see more and more has happened, which is really, again, a real change in the New York cultural field and how we advocate and how we ask for money, is that in this year's, you know, what we call our budget ask that we've put together, there is a fund for individual artists. Last year, the mayor and Gonzalo Casals, who was the commissioner, came up with City Artist Corps grants, which was $5,000 to individual artists. And they had, you know, they could take the money, use it however they wanted. They had to do some sort of public performance or exhibition, et cetera. But it was a great program, and it was really well received. And like 72% of those grants went to artists of color. So it really shifted things in the right direction. And so we are advocating now that that should be part of the city's cultural funding and support every year. There should be direct support for individual artists. So
I'm wondering too, is there a role for arts councils in the advocacy space? Meaning so often in the art world, you know, people carve out their territory, like you do advocacy and this one does this. But isn't there a more like a rising tide lifts all boats kind of strategy that should be used, since this is such a huge industry, huge sector in New York City?
I would add to that, like what would be their role? I
mean, right. I think that's exactly
not
that
just
the question.
Not just their role, but what? Because it seems like they're under leveraged resource. That's, you know, if I look at them. You know, the reason I say this is because I'm on the chair of the Art Advisory Committee for the Brooklyn Arts Council. And one of the things that I'm seeing is that, you know, they're kind of out of sync with 21st century culture to a certain extent.
Well,
not as a criticism, but as... You
know. The Borough Arts Councils are an invaluable resource.
Thank you.
They have been underfunded for decades.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I work with all of them. And, you know, one of the things we first did when we were coming up with, you know, what New Yorkers for Culture and Arts should be, is we gathered the five or six Borough Arts Councils together. And, you know, it was like the first time they'd met in years. Part of the problem is they don't have the capacity. So they need somebody to sort of, you know, Charlotte Cohen at the Brooklyn Arts Council will reach out to me and say, Lucy, do you have a take on this? Okay, good. Well, I can help you with that. Or are you testifying here? So, you know, just some support.
So there is some convening and collaboration that 100% goes on behind the scenes. That's kind of what my question was.
No, that's good to hear.
But isn't there a need for more? That's my, because I've been to a lot of meetings where I don't hear the artist's voice represented.
And that's one role that, you know, part of the critical role that the Borough Arts Councils play, right, is that they do fund individual artists. You can apply as an individual artist for small grants from the Arts Councils. Again, thanks to our the Commissioner Casals, who is no longer commissioner, but he was for the past 2 years.
We have Commissioner Lori Cumbo now.
Yes,
we do.
Yes, from this neighborhood.
There you go.
No,
yes.
Fantastic.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
We're talking with Lucy Sextant, the Executive Director of New Yorkers for Culture and Arts.
Lucy, so happy to have you here with us. I wanted you to speak about the Culture Vibe Fund that New Yorkers for Culture and Arts is working on. Can you talk to us about what that project is?
Absolutely. Every year, you know, we as a coalition, and I work with other coalitions, the Cultural Institutions Group, the Coalition of Theaters of Color, and many organizations to come up with what should the ask be in this year's city budget, right? So this year, we're calling the ask Culture Vibe NYC, which is an ask to fund culture for a visionary investment in building the economy of New York City. And it is a broad ask, so that it asks not only for, you know, money for the Department of Cultural Affairs to re-grant to everyone, but also for money to help individual artists, money to create a cultural equity fund so that it would go directly to address years of systemic racism in the system of funding. So that what we try to do is to build something that is broad. It actually follows quite closely the blueprint that Deputy Mayor Maria Torres Springer announced a few weeks ago, is how we're going to rebuild New York's economy, right? And culture is part of every bit of it. So we have tried to say, how can we make a broader ask for all the different places that culture exists within the Department of Education. The Department of Probation has a great cultural program. So how can we say this is where we exist in all of these spaces, in the space of public safety, in the space of community strength, and what kind of funding would really make that a more robust system, which can then, as you say, lift the whole boat, right? Because if you have stronger communities, if you enliven local economies, if you're getting tourists to go out to, you know, the Louis Armstrong House Museum out in Queens and not just going to the American Museum of Natural History. If they go to both of them, then you're distributing the wealth and you're creating a sort of, you know, bottom up economy that gets actually be sustainable and robust.
So I'm sitting here listening to you and it's wonderful stuff, but you know, I'm looking at this as it's a $110 billion industry in New York City alone, 140 some billion in the state. Like this.
And I should correct it, because what we're saying there is that the creative economy, what the comptroller's report said, is that the creative economy in New York City generates $110 billion in economic activity.
Yeah, right.
But it's an important thing to point out, because that's what we are, right? We are economic multipliers. You invest a little bit of money in us, and then we start things going, and then that spreads the wealth. And
I understand. It's not just the...
Absolutely.
It's the restaurants and the support services and everything else, and tourism, et cetera. But, you know, that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, right? Like, so there seems to be some kind of disconnect with some policymakers that is that lack of knowledge about it or interest?
100%. It is a lack of understanding of how we operate. And I think that too often, and this is going to be no surprise to you, arts and culture can be seen as sort of a cherry on top,
right.
as a luxury
a
item.
Thing.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh,
it's if we have the money for it. First, we're going to do all these other things.
Like, people have to eat.
Yes.
Well, actually.
And they do need to eat.
Yes.
But they also need to have places to gather. They need places for youth to express themselves, to see that there might be a job for them in music or hip hop or dance. Or, you know, DJing and music producing or whatever it is. You know, this is the economy of New York City. It is one of the great industries of New York City, and we should be treating it as such and developing a workforce that comes from New York City to work in that industry.
Now, what about about 1% for the arts? And is your request in addition to that 1% for arts?
Our dream is that we would work towards a space where 1% of the total New York City budget would be invested in arts and culture. And that is a big dream, but it is an achievable dream. Washington, D.C. does that. So we can get there. At the moment, it is 0.25% of the city budget.
Okay. Oh,
so
goodness.
It would be growing us 4 times. But so what we're viewing this as a down payment towards that, as to say, you start this investment, you'll start to see the payoff. Mayor Adams wants people to come back to their offices. What's one of the best reasons people have to be in their office? They go out afterwards and see a show.
I'm sorry, the concerts in the plazas, all of that.
Absolutely.
That's what makes New York, New York. Otherwise, you could live any other place.
Exactly.
Right?
Or to go out to, you know, dancing afterwards, or to go to hear live music. You know, these are the things that you cannot do at home on your Zoom. So I think that what we want to show is that if you give us this investment, it's a $100 million ask this year. And then you'll see that though the payments start to happen, you'll see the, you know, tax base start to be rebuilt. You'll see public safety improve. You'll see all the things that arts and culture can bring.
How will they see
education?
That? If I'm, let's say, Brooklyn Borough president or the mayor or something, or people or the policymakers, how would I know that? How would I see that? Where are those? What's the process for seeing the numbers, the impact, or?
And again, it's partly an education job, and you know,
and the controller's office puts together a pretty hefty report. You go right.
Comptroller's office does a great job, and that's who generated the $110 billion number that you were quoting earlier, which is absolutely right and absolutely critical that we had that data. So we depend on it. But for instance, when you look at, say, the Neon Arts Program, right? It's a neighborhood outreach network. It's run out of Carnegie Hall, but it has 7 Neon Arts centers across the 5 boroughs. And those centers exist in areas where there's high amounts of youth probation. And it gets 16 to 24-year-olds involved, and it goes to the neighborhood and says, okay, what do you think would be good cultural programs that you know the youth in this neighborhood would like to go to or would be useful for people? So they build it from the ground up. They get young people involved in these cultural programs and, you know, writing programs and photography, et cetera, and they have an unbelievable success rate at keeping folks who have started to be involved in probation and the criminal justice system from removing themselves and not being further involved in it. So once you start to lift up those numbers and you can say, like, you want, you know, youth not to be involved in criminal justice, look at this program. Increase the funding for that program. Widen it so that it's in more neighborhoods. Because part of it is, as you say, just people not knowing the numbers and knowing the impact that a small investment, and that goes through the Department of Probation.
I would say that your website is phenomenal. And you talked about 5 strategic initiatives that you thought would help to revitalize this city. Can you talk to us about what those are?
Absolutely. Culture Vibe, which is the name of this ask, has identified 5 places that investment would really make a difference. And in particular, it would make a difference in making our city a more equitable city and making our funding for the arts and culture more equitable. So at the top is a $15 million fund that's called the Cultural Equity Fund. And that would support Black, Indigenous, people of color led and serving organizations. A $10 million fund for tourism and marketing for culture across the 5 boroughs. So not just the way it's been done, but one that in particular aims at decentralizing tourism to every neighborhood and to the
cultural
assets.
And it should be, because we've got some great things going on in these neighborhoods in Brooklyn, right? And all over the 5 boroughs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's just about lifting it up and letting people know it's there. Mm-hmm. A $10 million workforce development investment. As I was saying, you know, we do employ 300... We provide 300 million jobs in New York City, and you want those jobs to be kids who are growing up in New York City and able to enter the workforce so that the cultural workforce reflects the city that we are in. $5 million for accessibility so that we can include deaf and disabled communities. One thing, it's really great to say, oh, yes, every theater should be accessible, and it costs money, right? It costs money to physically make the space accessible. It costs money to hire American Sign Language interpreters. You know, it's an investment. Everyone would like to do it. And now we have to provide them the funds to actually do the work, and so that every cultural space in New York City can be accessible to every New Yorker. And finally, and this sounds like, finally, we have the $5 million investment in artists and the renewal of the city artists core program. That is something that we have not done in the past. The last year was the first year that it happened, which was direct grants from the city to individual artists. We have to make it possible for artists to live and work in New York and not be dependent on this job here and this job here, but to actually get direct support from the city.
And so often artists revitalize a neighborhood and then they can no longer live in it. So it's like regentrification can be very anti-artist, you know, and I see them being exploited in that way. And quite honestly, I don't like that.
There's also arts organizations are what they call cultural anchors.
Absolutely. You know,
this is why the city urban planners like to put in these cultural organizations, because it changes the fabric of a neighborhood.
Absolutely.
But it's an ecosystem, because, you know, like you say, it's the individual. Where does the individual artist fit within that?
And it's why it has to be approached, you know, why New Yorkers for Culture and Arts not only asks for support for artists and cultural organizations, but also works on policy. Because yes, you support artists and get them direct access to funding, but then you have to pass policies that will make it possible for cultural organizations and artists to remain in the neighborhoods which they are helping to revitalize. Right now, we have seen for generation and generation and generation, it happens and then they're pushed out. And, you know, it's Fort Greene, we're right in the middle of it, you know, and so we have to, and there are ways to make it, you know, make it possible for cultural organizations. One of the things that's at the city council right now is a commercial rent stabilization bill. So that if I go to a neighborhood where I can get affordable rent for my dance studio, then once the neighborhood comes up, I have to pay this extraordinary rent and I need to leave again. If we had commercial rent stabilization, it would help keep those small organizations at a reasonable rent in the neighborhoods which they are helping to revitalize.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
And we're talking to Lucy Sexton, the executive director of New Yorkers for Culture and Art. Mm-hmm. What is the argument that you can make around workforce development as a strategy to open their eyes and to get them to really support? Because I think many of them do support, but there's all these competing interests. So how does workforce development play into this?
There's a number of ways that it operates within the culture system and that have been working and that need to be expanded. You know, you have the CUNY Artist Corps, so that basically they would pay kids to do internships, CUNY kids who are at the City University, to do internships in cultural organizations. So the city pays for that. Then they have a ramp into that sector, you know, to get jobs in that sector. However, it needs follow-up. It needs expansion. It needs also for those cultural organizations to be paying living wages and to be giving benefits, because we can pay for an internship and that's fantastic, and that provides an ability for lower income kids to do an internship at a museum or at a cultural space. But they also need to be looking at, you know, I'm going to need to get out of school and get a job and get some health insurance. So it's also an investment in the organizations that can employ people and to say, yes, let's work so that these are living wage jobs in this industry, which is so important to New York City.
I think there's an added benefit there too, which is that, you know, many museums are talking about inclusion, but struggling with it. And I think this would give them access to this, no?
It always comes back to this. I really do think that because it's, you know, kids who really need to be making a living, maybe supporting their own parents, you know, paying for rent in this city, et cetera. That's very hard to do if you're being asked to work at a very low wage entry position. And so therefore, who can work at that low wage entry position? You know, white kids, middle class kids, kids who maybe parents are going to pay for their apartment for a couple of years while they get their feet under them. So, you know, if you want to make it equitable, if you want to make it something that employs the real New Yorkers, you know, the people who live in New York, then we have to come up with a better system and be able to pay living wages and proper benefits.
Now, you talked about a little earlier about equitable and sustainable land use with these developers. What kind of progress are you making in that space? I see that you're asking for incentives for developers to engage in public-private partnerships, tax abatements, and that kind of thing. How is that moving? How are you moving forward with that?
Well, I'm excited about an initiative at the City Council right now that Councilmember Carlina Rivera is putting forward again. She put it forward last year, and she's reintroducing it. It would make any city-owned property. It would first be eligible to be bid on by a community land trust, right? So their neighborhood land trust, or by a local nonprofit, so that you have some amount of time. I think it should be a little bit longer time because that's going to take some time to put the money together. But so that those city-owned properties, which normally get sold to developers, et cetera, would first be available and saleable at a lower rate to, yeah. So that's, I'm pushing for that to happen.
Excellent. In terms of what you're doing in the equity, diversity, and inclusion space, can you share what's going on with New Yorkers for Culture and Arts there?
So one thing we ask for is for the Department of Cultural Affairs to have more funding to do their work. Now, why is that an equity ask? Because if the Department of Cultural Affairs doesn't have enough people, then it takes longer for the money to get out. There's not as many people there to answer your questions if you have them. And who needs those resources? Smaller organizations, often BIPOC-led and BIPOC-serving organizations in communities of color that can't float the money until the grant comes through, right? They don't have those kind of deep pockets and resources many times. They don't have a really deep-pocketed board. And they need, you know, access to their program officer to say, you know, when is this coming through? What should I do? What's happening? And so if DCLA can't serve people to distribute the funds that they have, then the ones who are most hurt are the smaller organizations, often led and for people of color. Of course, the Cultural Equity Fund is asking for a direct and targeted investment. You know what? There was a wonderful study that just came out by Hugh Arts NYC, and they did a mapping of all organizations of color across, cultural organizations of color across the five boroughs. And they estimated that it would be a $100 million investment to just bring them up to an equitable investment. So we're starting down that road, asking for a $15 million investment that would be to address this systemic and longstanding inequity. That is about supporting smaller organizations in the five boroughs, the Louis Armstrong House Museum, which I brought up earlier, you know, small organizations that are cultural gems, but are not supported in the same way that more centralized cultural organizations are. So if we can make that equal, make that more equitable, so everyone's getting some funding, that would help.
What was revealed during the time of COVID?
This is purely my own opinion.
Okay. Right.
When COVID happened, it really revealed who was the most fragile parts of this ecosystem. Who are the ones who are not going to make it through, or who are at most at risk for not making it through? And it turned out when they did the study at the end of 21 that, oh, yes, organizations of color, the most fragile, received the least relief and were most likely not to make it through. So it was undeniable that this is not just an ideological issue. This is a funding issue. And if we don't take off the veil and address it in a nuts and bolts way and say, yes, we need direct funding that is for this specifically. We need to address it with policy. We need to address it in the many multi-pronged approach. You know, it's not going to change just by goodwill or us all, you know, feeling that it's the right thing to do.
I'm sitting here wondering, how are you going to do all of this? I just want to thank you so much for joining us, Lucy. This was great. This is great information.
Thank you, Tony. It's a wonderful conversation. And I will add that the other people that I have in this organization are the coalition, right? There's 250 organizations that when I say, can you meet with a council person, they're ready to go. So it's really the power of a coalition that's going to make this work.
Thank you so much.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.